talking to the duck. You know, that's just the funniest joke I've ever heard. I'm so glad I got to share it with you all. But I play games on my Android, on my PS4, and my Nintendo Switch. And yes, if you play on the Switch, I've got my friend code right up there, send me a request. My favorite game series include a lot of classics, Mario, Zelda, Mega Man, Metroid, especially Final Film, I think, from kindergarten. One day, saw something under the TV, and asked my mom, what is that? And she said, that's a ColecoVision. I had never heard of that, of course, but I was about 4 or 5 years old. Unfortunately, a lot of you in here have never heard. How many people have heard of a ColecoVision?
I have one.
Oh, wow. I'll tell you, my favorite game on there was one called Ladybug. To this day, I still have a soft spot for ladybugs because of that game. It was like a little Pac-Man type game. I could reach level 100 on it, easy. And games really helped me a lot with forming friendships in my life. That's how I came to know people, of course. Once I got a Nintendo, I was pretty much the game master at my school. And I have been playing games all my life, ever since then. Like when I was getting ready to move here, being on the spectrum, my divorce care leader came and talked to my parents, just give them some assurance, and they said, and he had told me, like, he has been playing games all his life. Now he's wanting to go out and live games. That's a good way of putting it. And of course, I affirm the virgin birth, in case anyone's wondering. Oh, if you don't know, ask Leo. That's a big inside joke with me, but yes. I have to always say that I affirm the virgin birth, which I do affirm. Okay, how many of you all have heard something like this? Video games are not understood by the present generation of adults. They are new, they make an enormous appeal to children, and they present ideas and situations which parents may not like. Consequently, when parents think of the welfare of their children who are exposed to these comparing situations, they wonder about the effects of the games upon the ideals and behaviors of their children. Do the games really influence children in any direction? Are their conduct, ideals, and attitudes affected by the games? Are the parts which are objectionable to adults understood by children, or at least by very young children? Do children eventually become sophisticated and grow superior to games? Are the emotions of children harmfully excited? In short, just what effect do video games have upon children of different ages? Okay, who has really heard, maybe not that quote, but something like that? Okay, I gotta be honest with you, that is not a real quote. This is a real quote. Films are not understood. If you look at this, I just took out the word films and replaced it with video games over and over. I wish that idea was original with me. I read this in Kevin Shute's book of Games and God, and it's okay, but it is the constant problem. Whenever a new medium rises up, there immediately seems to be a panic mode going on among Christians. What do we do? What do we do? What do we do? I wouldn't be surprised if when the Codex came up early in Christian circles, there might be some Christian, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? When the printing press came out, oh no, how are we going to handle this? Folks, technology is going to come. Deal with it. Use it properly, but this is part of panic mode. I'm probably not going to tell me, but I also got a book by, can't remember who wrote it, this guy who called it the Lord comic book hysteria. Back in the day, saying, for instance, Batman and Robin in the 60s were obviously in a homosexual relationship. And that caused standards to be placed on comic books, which, ironically, when you do this kind of thing, it increases the sales of what you're trying to go against. When someone talked about it in, for instance, one of the Grand Theft Auto games, the coffee scene, hardly anyone would have known about that scene. But you know what? A lot of people talk about it. Guess what happened? Everyone found out about it. Panic never serves us well. I just do a show. Video games are the new medium today. Most of us today, probably if we have kids, we don't think hardly anything about sending our kids to see the films. And yeah, we have some standards, but we're not going to go into panic. We need to do the same with games. So now, why this topic matters. Right, here's how many gamers we have globally. and some of you might be gamers, you don't even know it. Does anybody, for instance, play Wordor every day? Yeah. You're a gamer to some extent. You play games like Farmville, Words with Friends, anything like that? You're a gamer. You play chess online? You're a gamer. And if you go to some sites, like for instance, I understand LinkedIn has these things like Fury and Arvison, and you get all these achievements that you have to complete. That's the gaming industry right there. It's affected us all. In 2019, there were over 2.5 billion active gamers around the world. 1 billion more than 5 years ago. Which we can mean, that means we can expect to be going up. Mid-2020, estimated 3.1 billion video game consumers. With a world population of 8 billion. This means around 40% of people from around the world play video games. Out of these, 50% only play on their smartphones, 48% play on PC, about 8% play on dedicated consoles. I do consoles and phones, so it tells me where you can see me. In 2021, there's an estimated 2.8 billion active gamers worldwide. And 2.5 billion global players play on mobile, 1.3 billion play on PC, and 800 million play on a console. And we talk about wanting to reach people groups. This is a people group. It's a very large people group. The average age of a video game player in the U.S. is 35 to 44 years old. How many people besides me fall in that range over here? And you both, I see two of hands, both of you play games there?
Yeah.
Yep. 38% of video gamers in U.S. are age 18 to 34. Who's in that group? Okay. And all of you play games? 26% or 35 to 54. Anyone else? Gamers? And 21% are under 18. Do we have any of those in here? I doubt. Oh, we do. Gamer? Okay. Gamers aged between 26 to 35 spend 7.5 hours a week playing. Wimps. Which is the highest among all age groups. In contrast, gamers over 60 years old spend the least time playing at 4.7 hours a week. Yes, gamers over 60 years old. 16.4% of players aged 18 to 25 said they play video games at work. Yep. In contrast, only 7.8% of players aged above 60 said the same. 42% of active console and PC players in the US, the United Kingdom, Sweden, France, Germany, and Poland are millennials, those aged 23 to 38. On the other hand, 20% are from Gen X or aged 16 to 22. 19% are from Gen Alpha or age 10 to 15, and 19% from Gen X, my generation, aged 39 to 50. 59% of video game players in the US are male, 41% are female. I guess these people are bigots and didn't realize we have 72,650 genders nowadays, so. Men in the US spend 51 minutes on weekdays playing games. Again, wimps. And using their computers for leisure. Women spend 29 minutes on weekdays for the same activity. What's wrong with you women here? On average, women gamers spend $359 per year on downloadable content and game accessories. Men spend $335 on average annually for said items. So now you might want to be careful about complaining to your husbands about how much money they spend, because it looks like you are spending more money on games than we are. 49.1% of male gamers said they are committed gamers. 48.8% of female Americans said the same. So this kind of helps destroy the stereotype of the lone loser nerd sitting in his mother's basement all day long. Come on in. Biblical imperative. Abraham Kuyper once said, "There is not a square inch in the whole domain of our human existence over which Christ, who is sovereign over all, does not cry, 'Mine.'" Does anybody in there see anything would say, except for video games? So, 1 Corinthians 10:31. So, whatever you eat or drink, whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Now, when Paul gives this quote, what's he talking about? Does anybody know?
Is he referring to the food sacrificed to idols?
Yes. He's about when you go to a party and you're eating a meal, go ahead and eat what you want, provide some exceptions. Whatever you're doing, do it to the glory of God. He's not talking about doing evangelism. He's not talking about ministry. He's talking about something people are doing for fun. And he's saying, do it for the glory of God. And you know, you got passages also like 1 Timothy 6:17, that God gives us everything richly for our enjoyment. And then 1 Corinthians 9:22, to the weak I became weak, to when weak I became all things to all people, so I would for means that might save some, and gamers are a growing population reward, and they are people Jesus loves and died for. So having said that, let's have a prayer together, and then we'll get into this. I should have done this earlier, but things get my mind sometimes. Father, we live in an age where you've richly provided for us, even in the area of entertainment. And that entertainment is something that draws us together, and we realize our pleasure comes, our true pleasure comes from your hand. In the name of your Son, Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Yeah. Keep in mind, if you ever read the Screwtape letters, Screwtape in there says, we have not been able to create one pleasure on our own, not one. Okay. So, what is a game? It sounds like a simple question. People could come to you and say, you play video games? Yep. Well, what is a game? You might be a bit flummoxed. According to game theorists, yes, we are game theorists, and I'm not just talking about Matt Pat's channel on YouTube, which if you haven't seen that channel, go check it out. There's a lot of awesome things in there. A game is a set of players, a set of choices, and a system that takes players' choices and translates them into player payoffs. And that's from Edward Castronova's Life is a Game, which it's kind of like wrong when Doug Grotius did his plenary here. I understand what he's saying, but he was saying, this is not a game. I hope when you walk out of here, you're going to think this is a game. But we'll probably agree on the main point. I get what he's saying. A game is a system in which players engage in an artificial conflict defined by rules that results in a quantifiable outcome. That side from Matthew Millsap's dissertation, Playing with God, a Theological Framework for Dialogue and Video Games. Yes, a Southern Baptist guy did his PhD dissertation at a seminary on video games. You all think I'm a PhD now? Okay. And the evolution of games. Like any other medium, video games have changed over time. I mean, we had to put the TV on Channel 3 to play video games. And I remember playing Game Boy at night and waiting until my parents drove under one of the lights on the interstate. Oh, I can see what's going on right now. Books used to be written laboriously and with much effort, and now can be mass-produced easily and even transmitted digitally and professionally read audibly for mass consumption. For instance, Tim Heary can give you several books digitally pretty much immediately. No one could have dreamed of that happening years ago. Movies have gone from silent films that had text thrown in separate captions and of short duration to CGI films that are digital masterpieces. And television has gone from black and white to being high definition color with numerous shows on numerous streaming services. See, my growing up experience was first with a ColecoVision with an emphasis on Ladybug, which I've already told you about. More people can easily remember a game like Super Mario Bros. Anyone? Anybody still remember the first level of that one? That Goomba has killed more people than any other enemy in video game history, I'm sure of it. And, of course, the original Legend of Zelda, which I've already predicted. I think I'm going to be sick on May 12th, 2023 this year. I can already feel it coming on. It has nothing whatsoever to do with Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom coming out that day. And today, games can have more information than ever before. Now they are not just adventures to complete or sports to win, but video games are becoming stories in their own right. The plot of many a video game can be compared to a first-rate motion picture or gripping novel. For instance, I'm a big Final Fantasy fan. I remember seeing an article in Game Informer before Final Fantasy X came out. I had to read it twice because I was thinking, did I just read that? Where I'm going to pretty much paraphrase what it said. You are Tidus, a star blitzball player on the world of Spira, and your home is destroyed by this mindless destroying force called sin. What? You fight against sin in this game? Yes, sin is the big enemy in the game. Now, the theology is terrible, how they handle it. But sin is the enemy. Imagine if we treat sin so like, imagine what would it look like if you saw your sin as it was like this big, ugly, grotesque monster? You think you'd deal with it a little bit more? Probably.
Yeah.
Yes, but yes, sin is the enemy in the game. And if you all want to find out, it is for sale, still on PlayStation, Xbox, and Nintendo Switch, even remastered. Emotionally connected stories. Now, in doing research for this, I asked people through the internet what game scenes they found emotionally gripping. Some people who hadn't played games for years still remember the scenes. It's true across the board. Christians and non-Christians alike both have memories, and even places where you would normally expect intense debate, when these were talked about, Christians and non-Christians alike remembered the stories fondly. These stories also point to deep longing in our own lives and to issues that resonate with the human experience. Okay, you're always looking for something to connect with unbelievers on. Here's something to connect with them on, because we all agree on these. Now, I've got some examples here of these. I'm a big cat lover. Well, no, I've got three games here on the show. Two of them have to do with cats. One is the opening to Cat Tales. That still, I want to cry still sometimes when I think about this opening. Hold on.
I'm going to escape. Escape?
Anybody know how to get that screen to come up here?
Where are you trying to get?
This one?
Let me just see if I can just close this out for a little bit. Okay, yeah.
Let's go again.
Now, here, I'll come right back up. Alright. So, I have a delay. I love my games, but I'm a technological idiot. Like I said, this scene can still make me want to cry a bit when I think about Cat Tales. There's tissues outside there in case anyone wants to. If I had Sheldon Cooper's enemies list, I'd say the mother would be right on top of my enemies list right there. There's another game called, and the game creates, you're the cat, you have to survive in the wild and build up family, things like that. This one's Stray, you're one of four cats that start the game. It's a rainstorm, you go through this basic level learning tutorial. I haven't finished one yet, I've only just started, but here's this.
Thank you.
Again, we have tissues available outside for anyone who wants them. And for this one, I'm going to go to an old scene here from Final Fantasy VII. A lot of you in here already know what scene this is, because this is the scene that stays with us forever. So, the reason I show all that is, I get back to where I was in here, because even if you're not a gamer, somehow I suspect all of you connected with at least one of those stories. You felt something with one of those stories. And the last scene there, tell you, those of you who grew up with the Star Wars generation, when you remember the words, Luke, I am your father, for us in the gamer generation, Sephiroth curing Aerith was that moment for us. Our worlds are still rocked talking about it. We've got the remake of that game coming out now, and the heart debate, is he still going to cure her? Is he still going to cure her? So these stories do connect with us. They resonate with us. We understand good, we understand evil. There's a reason people rage quit sometimes in the middle of games. Even me. That's it, I can't take it anymore! But games are also different than other mediums. However much you like a movie, TV show, or book, aside from choosing your own adventure books, the stories are going to turn out the exact same way every time. You might notice something new in a story that you haven't before, but the story will still be the same. Folks, no matter how many times you read Lord of the Rings, the ring is still going to be destroyed in the fires of Mount Doom. It's not going to change. No matter how many times you watch The Matrix, it's still going to end the exact same way. Nothing's going to change here. Video games, by contrast, are interactive, and the experience is never identical to another. While the player must operate within the parameters set of a game design, the experience can be ever-changing, and this is especially more so as online gaming requiring cooperation becomes more and more real. If I go home for dinner today and I decide I want to play the original Super Mario Bros. On my Switch, I played that game several times. It's going to be different still this time. It's always going to be different. You also have a vested outcome in what you're doing. In a video game, the player has a vested outcome in what happens in the story. He is not just a passive observer, but he is an active recipient. When you watch a movie or TV show, the characters on the screen don't have any interaction with you whatsoever. When you play a game, the characters on the screen do interact with you. Gamers are more prone to work hard then because no one wants to fail at anything. Gamers, like anyone else, want to be good at what they do and want to succeed at it. You know, this makes me think about our educational system. How many people in here have done some research on a video game because you wanted to pass a certain level or do something like that? Who has done that before? And how many of you also could tell me some of the best secrets about your video games and play straight through them? Could you do that still? You know what? None of you did this because you had to pass a test. None of you did this because you were earning money. You did it out of your own free will for a challenge, and that information stuck with you because it mattered to you. Think we could learn something about this in the education system?
Amen.
I freely look up in my free time things on a video game so I can do it better, because there is a reward in that system that I see immediately. When you study for a test, I have said, but odds are a few months later, you're going to completely forget everything you studied for that test. If not just a month later, if not just a week later. Now, let's talk about Quest. Anybody relate to this one right here?
Yeah.
Yep. If video games have taught me anything, this cat has a side quest to offer me. What is a quest? Quests are missions that are taken on that give a player a goal to reach with a clear objective. We live in a world where the concept of quest is often dead. We work to survive and provide for our families without ideas about why we do either. We live in a world of no challenge where, at least in the West, most all of our needs are taken care of. If people do not sense that they have some purpose in life, it becomes meaningless, and that void is either filled with usually something very bad, or it can lead to tragedies like suicide. The great tragedy in our world is we don't have quest in many ways. There has been talks about how some, you know, we need rites of passage for boys to become men and girls to become women. Something. We are not challenged anymore by much of anything. Most of us go to our jobs and we just do it to earn money. We don't see any great purpose behind what we do, and people want purpose. No one wants to have them in their tombstones like, I did my 9-to-5 job every day. Everyone wants to make some sort of mark on the world. Everyone wants a quest. Monks spoke of ascetia, a sort of intense boredom where one feels like all they are doing is meaningless, and this can often lead them to temptation, as it at least gives them some sort of excitement in life. We have this a lot more today, but it was around back then. This goes back 1,500 years. Yes, people 1,500 years ago had something relevant to say about video games today. John Cashin. He fancies that he will never be aware while he stays in that place. He's talking about monks here, unless he leaves his cell. Then the 5th or 6th hour brings him such bodily weariness and longing for food that he seems to himself worn out and wearied. Then besides this, he looks about anxiously this way and that, and sighs that none of the brethren come to see him, and often goes in and out of his cell, and frequently gazes up at the sun, as if it was too slow in setting. And so a kind of unreasonable confusion of mind takes possession of him, like some foul darkness. It makes him idle and useless for every spiritual work, so that he imagines that no cure for so terrible an attack can be found in anything except visiting some one of the brethren on the solace of sleep alone. That's from John Cason, who I think lived around the 400s or so. If I relate to that experience today, just wondering, how much longer is the day going to go on? When can I just go to sleep? Why isn't anything happening around here? We still have that. Thomas Aquinas. Now, I studied at SES for a while. Aquinas is really big there. As Dr. Howe here says, Thomas Aquinas and I, we are just like this right here, okay? This is him right up here. This is me way down here. Aquinas says, according to Damascene, ascetia is a sort of heavy sadness. Quodium tristitia aggravans. My apologies if I butchered that, which I probably did. That presses down on a man's mind in such a way that no activity pleases him. Ut nihil er agere libiat. In the same way that what is sour also lacks heat, I'm not even going to bother trying anymore. And so ascetia involves a sort of weariness with respect to acting, as is clear from the gloss on Psalm 106:18, where so hid every sort of food. And some say ascetia is a listlessness of mind that neglects to undertake good things. The problem is our society is incredibly bored. And Dr. Howe saying, I'm a bored certified technician. And the reason many people can play video games is because they are bored. That does not mean that it is wrong, as there is no sin in having fun. But rather than attack the game, it is better to look and see what need is often being met in a game. We live in an age where people move from one field to the next. In one sense, this is good. We can use and we should always want people to move to a deeper level. How many people remember a time when there were about, three channels on television you could watch? Yep. And then we got cable. There's a whole lot more. Now we have streaming, so you can watch pretty much anything you wanted to. And yet we still have people still saying, going, looking for your streaming service. And there's nothing on to watch. We still do that today. Our society is bored and we have so much more. Everyone's up. A day and age we thought, you know, problem with our society is people don't have access to good information. If they had access to information, people would be more knowledgeable. Now we've got the internet. I contend people are more stupid than ever before, actually. As Edward Castronova says in his book, Life is a Game, we can have sex with one another as if we thought that the human race was being devoured by wars and we had to repopulate the planet. Sex is no longer seen as a meaningful fulfillment of a covenant reflecting the love of a trinity, but simply what one does to have fun. I mean, people see this in the sitcoms going on here. It's just, this is fun, that's it. He also holds that we eat not because we are hungry, but often because we are bored. It is one reason we have an obesity problem in the world today. Of course, no one here, I'm sure, has ever struggled with eating because they're bored, right? No one. Yep. Yeah, all of these are things trying to fill a void. And I know it's an obvious, I'm not saying that any of these things in and of themselves are bad. Certainly not. Everything is a creation of God. God created it for good. We are the ones who screw it up. Now, Castronova's work in writing on how game design says a lot about the human condition, he is a game designer. He writes from a Catholic position. The world we live in has many aspects of a game, and God is the ultimate game designer. In D&D terms, God is the dungeon master of this game we're playing. It is our job to find out what the purpose of a game is, how to play it, and how to play it well to win the game. This involves our stance in the game, worldview, and what we think the goal is. If we choose rightly, we will progress well in the game, think level up, and be able to advance and live in accordance with the rules set forth by the game designer. The more we fight against those rules, or sin, the more we will find ourselves losing the game. So this is one reason I said, and I think Doug Rotas would agree with me on this, I want you to treat life like a game. I want you to see it as a game, because you know what? When we play our games, we take them seriously. We study and we look up and we research these things because we want to do good at the game. I told you I'm sadly divorced, and some people have walked with me through that journey here. One thing I establish early on, now there is a time to mourn, after something like that, and I'm still mourning every day, honestly. But I also decide early on, I only get one shot at this game. I'm playing this game to win. If I give up and cower and don't do anything and hold myself up, she wins. I lose. I'm going to play to win. That's one reason I'm here at seminary, because I said, I need to get my master's, go on with my life, succeed. Some people might think about getting revenge was in this case. Here's my philosophy on that. The best revenge is a life well lived. Play the game well, live well. I only get to live like this one time before I stand before God. I want to play well. I want to succeed. This gets us back to quest. We could say that this is our quest. But even then, we have to define what winning the game means. Does winning the game mean just making it to heaven? So folks, if we do all our evangelism and we say the purpose is so you can go to heaven when you die, we're pretty much saying everything else in between is irrelevant. There is much more to Christianity than just going to heaven when you die. There is a whole lot to do right here. I remember being in a Bible study group And I lived in Knoxville and seeing a lady say, well, you know what? I'm saved, my children are saved. Just sit back and wait for Jesus to come. If so, where's the purpose of everything else we do here? What are we to do when we make it to heaven? Or is just getting there the goal? I would contend that part of our goal, part of our quest is stopping the evil right here in the world around us. Games are often about the battle of good versus evil. You want to know where it's going on? Step right outside. Good versus evil going on right here. Or even better, look inside your own selves. Good versus evil going on right there. Whatever quest are we taking to fulfill the grand quest overall? Example, if you want to get married or remarried, like myself, you must first find someone you're interested in and somehow bring about a relationship with that person before you can get the quest of marrying that person. For instance, and Tim was talking about the old books the other day, if you decide you're going to take a quest and say, I'm going to read 10 of these books before the year is over, odds are you are going to burn yourself out. You won't do it. What I would say is 7 more weeks will go like, I'm going to read 10 pages a day. That's a good start. Maybe later on you might want to up that to 20 or so on. Do several miniature quests on your goal to get to the one big quest. And for those of you who don't know, side quests in a game are little goals you can do on the end, on the side, that don't affect the main outcome of the story, but you can get your own rewards from. And of course, it's rather humorous in the game, but you can do these no matter what's going on. I don't care if that big meteor from Sephiroth is heading towards the planet. I want to win a chocobo race! And who cares? Yes, Zelda, honey, it's horrible that Ganon's holding you captive and is about to take over the world, but by golly, Link's got to go fishing. And I play Final Fantasy XIV. That's a multi-man online role-playing game. You have to queue up for dungeons and raids you can do with other players, so I set one, and I'm going through a game, and there's a cutscene that I bought that in it, some disaster happens, this baby gets thrown into a lake, and it goes completely under, and right at that moment, pops up, my mission is ready. So here I have to go in this half-hour dungeon, the baby survived somehow. That is one incredible kid, survived half an hour underwater. That's the way side quests work. Challenge sparks up our lives. When a person has a quest, they often feel invigorated to do something. That is, if you want to get your man to do something, make it a quest, make it a challenge. Men will do most anything if there is a challenge involved to it. A man will do the most stupid thing in the universe just to hear one of a man say, "You the man!" We men are laughing because we all know we've done it before. Think back to your education. How much of what you studied for a test do you really remember no matter how much cramming you did? Now think about something that you do because you genuinely enjoy it. This could include video games. How much of this do you remember to this day? Could you go straight through the old Super Mario Brothers today? Could you find everything you need in the original Legend of Zelda without using the internet? I can do both of those. Sometime after I got married, we had a Wii, and I was turning on the original Super Mario Brothers, and my now ex-wife said, oh, put it on two-player. I want to play too. I said, okay. But honey, I'm not going to take any warp zones. I want to go straight through the game as it was intended. I said, okay. So I did. On one life. Entirely. Never died the whole time through. I got the end. She said, I don't think I want to play anymore. But you can't beat perfection. That was her words. Men, especially, we love challenge. You tell us we can't do something, we're more prone to say, oh yeah, watch us! Gamers will even take regular games and make new rules the designers never gave them just to give an extra challenge. Pokemon players will sometimes have a Nuzlocke challenge where if a Pokemon faints in battle, that Pokemon must be released and cannot be used again. There are speedrunning communities that study games intensely and try to find all the glitches possible to finish the game in the fastest time. The original Super Mario Bros. Can be finished in under 5 minutes by speedrunners. So if they could have finished it 6 or 7 times, I hope now I've been talking this way. And you go and watch some of these videos and you think, okay, I'm going to go burn my controller now. Games are often a great source of connection. Numerous people can easily go to a major event that has a gaming competition just as much as people go to a sporting event. So you can have stadiums filled with people watching a gaming competition. Mobile games like Pokemon Go have led to social exchanges and people working together to reach a goal. Anybody else in here play Pokemon Go besides me? Yep. Multi-man online role-playing games. Who all play some of those in here? Provide ways for gamers to interact in fun communities where people get to know one another. You know, it's incredible the way the gaming community can interact. There are jerks in every community. But by and large, I know there's a whole lot of camaraderie in the gaming community. That's why Gamergate worked so successfully. Many friendships today are formed with an interest in video games that go on to even deeper interests. The huge majority of friends I've got in my life, we have over games. My roommate, when I lived in Charlotte, I got to know him on Fiaggi, where we were debating. How did he introduce himself to me? Well, he was really impressed by a post I wrote, and he sent me a picture of an avatar he designed for me on his computer from Final Fantasy XI, and said, "I don't know if you play Final Fantasy any, but boom, instant friendship connected. Still great friends to this day." Purpose of playing games. Games are meant to help us succeed better in the world outside of the game. Games can take one aspect of reality and then situate it in a new way. Someone playing Mario Kart is really thinking about driving. Or I will say those blue shells have sure destroyed a lot of marriages over the years. Not mine, but they have destroyed some. Games, there is a rule, Jimmy. If you want a happy marriage, there are some video games you should never play with your spouse. Mario Kart's one of them. Games also can build in people a sense of a battle of good versus evil. I contend one of my drives in the world of apologetics comes from gaming. The belief that there is a real evil and that real good can overcome that evil, and it is the job of all of us to contribute to the battle of good versus evil. Peter Crave, Catholic philosopher, once said, "Christian apologetics is the closest you come to saving the world." Doesn't that sound exciting to anyone out there?
Yeah.
When you study apologetics, you are training to save the world. And yeah, I can be sitting there playing a game, and I see a pop-up of someone else typing me on Facebook. Pause. This is it's actually more exciting in many ways. Games are often theistic. When one enters a game world, rather than many times a world of pure materialism, one enters a world of magic and monsters and often deities of some sort. And this is taken as if it's perfectly natural. No one questions it. Translations of the original Legend of Zelda, there's a book out about this, but it costs about $100, and I want to give this talk well, but I'm a seminary student. I don't have $100 to spend like that. Indicates strong Christian overtones. The magic book over here was really a Bible in the original Japanese game, and there was a cross on Link's shield. And using a book in the desert temple and Link to the past, Link looks more like he is praying. And those who don't know, Link is the hero of the Zelda games. That here's a picture of a scene in the Japanese game. So what do you think of this? Link's message to you all, Jesus is Lord. Need for Christian game designers. Christians are often horrible at making media. Now say it. Does anybody ever see non-Christians talking about how awesome Christian movies are? Christian media usually sucks, okay? We make presentations that only other Christians want, and we think we have to explicitly state the gospel because our audience would be too stupid to figure it out if we don't. Can someone tell me where in the Chronicles of Narnia C.S. Lewis explicitly states what the gospel is? Oh, that's right. He doesn't. But yeah, everyone sees the gospel in the Chronicles of Narnia. Games can teach a story, and they do. But a game should also strive to be fun. What good does it do to have a great story if no one wants to hear it? Games should also be real. Villains in a game should be evil because real evil exists. Tragedies should happen because tragedies do happen. You know, I'd contend Probably the most evil villain I know of in video games is Kefka from Final Fantasy VI. Because all the other villains, usually when you see a villain in a story, at least they have some good for themselves, at least they want to accomplish. Kefka was the true Nietzschean Superman. He wanted to destroy everything just to destroy everything. And technically in that game, he was the one villain who did destroy everything. How do each gamers? Get to know them and find out what games they like and buy. Do they prefer just casual games like phone games? Do they prefer role-playing games? First-person shooters? Platformers? Talk to them about what makes the game enjoyable to them, and if you like the game, play it with them. Parents, try playing games with your kids. Seriously. Don't be preachy or assuming Satanism and evil in any game. Please don't do that. Gamers are used to a lot of condemnation immediately. While there is a time and place to discuss such issues, that position in a gamer's life must be earned. If you go up to one of your gaming friends when you reach them and you start talking to them about how evil something is in the game and how that's the work of the devil right there, congratulations, you will probably never ever reach that person. Now, there are some issues we have not touched on. Honestly, when I first set out to do this talk, I thought this is all I would be teaching on. Then the more and more I started reading, I thought, this is a more important stuff to teach on. There are issues that are important, but as I was going through, I found be less more and more of your questions. I can speak on reason Q&A some. I may going to be giving some recommended sources on most topics. Those were about topics like game addiction, violence in video games, alleged cases of video games leading to mass shootings, and sexism in video games, are encouraged to check these resources. Okay. For those of you who weren't around during the 90s, this is the battle that defined our generation. This is what we went to war over! Which one is better? Nintendo or Sega? Console wars. And this is a book I could not put down when I started reading. In fact, after I wrote a review on a blog, the author himself got in touch with me and told me he liked a particular part, and it was about sharing the gospel. So he could be a Christian for all I know. But this is the battle that defined our generation, Nintendo versus Sega. And if you want to know the history of this, this is a fun read. Anyway, all the books in here I've either read or I'm going through right now. Super Mario, how Nintendo conquered America, because when Atari had the great gaming crash in the early 80s involving E.T. and other games, everyone thought video games as a home effort was dead. It would never happen. Nintendo changed all that. Super Mario has become a mascot. In fact, I bet a lot of you like Mario. You might not even be able to tell why. Because Mario's just this pudgy little Italian guy who seems to jump really high. But Mario is essentially every man. Everyone can relate to Mario's story. And this is the story of how Nintendo worked technologically, the mistakes they made, the things they did right. It's really a very enjoyable read. This one was just so much fun to listen to. Because this one I also went through an audible. The Gaming Mind, A New Psychology of Video Games and the Power of Play. The guy who does it, he's a gamer. And he talks about how someone came to their hospital and the lady said, oh, he's one of those gamer kids. Kind of dismissing it. And he just said, what games does he play? And one story I remember was a lady coming in because she was convinced she had an addiction to Candy Crush. And instead of just saying what many people were saying to me, okay, well, let's start working on how you can cut back on this. He started saying, why are you playing this? And did research and found what the real issue was. Today she can play Candy Crush happily. It's not an addiction. It was really an eye-opening game book for me to go through. Okay, that one does. Life is a game. I'm going through this right now. Edward Casanova, I heard about it on the Word on Fire podcast. It's a Catholic podcast. It's a priest and someone else, both Catholics, talking about video games. A Catholic priest talking about video games. Yes, they do exist. But Even when I was just 20% through the book, I said, this is one of the most changing books I've ever read. A whole lot of what I'm talking to you about comes from this book. I'm still going through it. It is still excellent to me. This is what I'm going through now on Audible, Getting Gamer, Psychology of Video Games. So, I can't say much about it, but I can say I am enjoying it at this point. Of Games and God, A Christian Exploration of Video Games by Kevin Shute, who I think teaches at Trinity. And this is one of those rare books that when I got to the final page, I was absolutely astounded I was at the final page. Because usually sometimes I look and say, okay, how much more do I have to go through to reach the end, planning my schedule out that way. I didn't do that with this one, even turn page. It's done? Already? I even interviewed on my podcast one time. Great work on this topic of games and God. Grand Theft Childhood. The Surprising Truth About Violent Video Games. If this is one of the ones I recommend for people who are concerned about video games and violence. For instance, how many people remember the Virginia Tech shooting?
Yeah.
And that one of the things it was accused of was where the shooter was playing so many violent video games. Here's what I said in the book. What actually was different about the shooter is he wasn't playing video games. That made him very antisocial. Group. Had he had a gaming group, who knows, maybe it wouldn't have happened. I don't know, but there's a whole lot of research done on this topic there. Here's another fun title for it. Moral Combat! Why the War on Violent Video Games is Wrong. And one of the things that they said is that when they do these tests on gamers to see if they're more aggressive, something they ask them something like, would you be more prone to put hot sauce in someone's food, for instance? Personally, I might do that just to be obnoxious to someone. The tests usually just don't really work well. They do talk about how, I don't play the Grand Theft Auto games. They talk about how one day, though, there was one of the games was supposed to be released, and they were worried about the effect that it would have on crime when that game was released. When that game was released, crime statistics did change indeed. They dropped. There's something going on here. Now, some other resources. Matthew Marisap's dissertation on video games and Christianity. Now, that one I can't find online, but I can tell you I just messaged him on Facebook and said, hey, can I have your dissertation? Sure. Send it to me. I can't pass it on to anyone else without his okay, but I'm sure you can get in touch with him if you really want to and say, hey, can I see your dissertation? Word of Fire, God and Gaming. I told you about that, the discussion. Game Theory video on if video games cause violence. There was a link right there. And, folks, we need more research done on these topics. I look up topics on Amazon. Like, for instance, is Christianity fun? For example. No one is talking about that. So here's some fun things you can do with your family. There is such a dearth of research. And we said, for about 3 billion gamers in the world, shouldn't we be doing some research on this? Shouldn't we be studying this? Shouldn't we find out games and why they work, how they work, and why people do them? Okay. And now it's time for the interactive game portion of our song, where you get to interact and ask some questions. Yes.
Okay, so my question is, long story short, I've been a gamer since I was like 6 years old, all the way from the Nintendo to the PlayStation 5, so I've had every single game since.
The original Nintendo?
The Nintendo 64.
Oh, kid, got it.
I was born in 2000, so
yeah.
that's the earliest I could go.
Yeah.
And then the GameCube, but
yeah.
Okay, so I started from that to that. I started from the game of the original, all of the Mario Brothers, right? The original, and then Super Smash Bros., Mario Racing, everything,
right?
All the way up to Fortnite, right?
Yeah.
So I played every single game in between that, right? Except for Final Fantasy and the nerd games, but...
I'll pray for you, you filthy pagan, whatever.
So I played all that, and now I'm currently 22, and I still play video games, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, studies show, like, people play video games, like, until, like, 35 or 44 whatever. And I'm trying to grow spiritually, you know, in this season of my life right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to come to my own conclusion about this topic. And whether, you know, if it's from the devil or video games or demonic, because you hear the old people talking about how it's like that, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't, and then, you know, the old people talk about, well, you know, well, there was this Colorado shooting that happened, and the dude played a video game at the Batman theater, and they were watching Batman, blah, blah, blah. And so I did my own, like, internal self-look, and just to see whether if it was an addiction, or, like, was it a habit, or what is this to me? And I just looked internally, and I prayed about it, and I don't believe I come to a conclusion, so I'm bringing up a question for it, and... me and my mom constantly fight about this. So I still live with my mother. She's a single mom.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I would just want to support her.
Good.
And I don't want to throw her in a nursing home because that's just American culture.
Yeah.
And so I want to have common ground with her. I don't want her to be, like, always tripping about it, like, always angry about me playing video games.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to solve this conflict. Because I tried to narrow it down to, like, 2 hours a day, try to limit myself on it, but that 2 hours ends up to 3 hours, that 3 hours ends up to 4 hours.
Yeah, that's gonna
so
happen.
So on, right?
Yeah.
So I've noticed it's became in the way of, because in the Bible it says, you shall have no other God before me.
Yeah.
So if I spend time with the Lord to start off my day and then I play video games, am I still putting God before the video? I mean, am I putting the video games before God? Because if I'm spending, now, in that deeper question, if I'm spending 30 minutes to an hour with God, and then I play for 4 hours straight, that's not a good balance, you know? And so
I think the general rule is you have to ask if something is really interfering with your day-to-day life to an extent that you're not able to do anything else, you're not able to function such a way. For instance, I passed all my classes here my first semester. Very easy. I did all my work. I turned it in on time. I did my reading entirely, and I still made time for games. And one thing I could tell you to do also, if you're interested in this kind of thing, multitask. When I play a game, I've got my Echo Show right next to me. So I'm watching YouTube videos, sometimes I'm watching videos on games, sometimes I'm watching videos on politics, sometimes I could be watching a lecture and say, oh, divine simplicity, or something like that. It's a great way of multitasking. Listen to an Audible book at the same time. If you walk around and do something like play Pokemon Go, have a headphones in. Listen to a book. Something my therapist has told me before is, he said, an idol is always what someone else is doing. That I find it, we live in an age where people can spend all their time watching and talking about sports. But as soon as it comes to video games, oh my gosh, that's such a problem. I'm sorry, but I don't remember the last time a city went and had riots in the city to celebrate their team winning the Pokemon championships. But I'd say this is something you have to work on yourself. I think the book, The Gaming Mind, could really help you out, and Kevin Shute's book of Games and God. But I can't really answer that question directly for you, because I'm not a therapist, and I don't play one on TV,
right. And
I don't know your history. But I would say, if you are concerned about this, just tell me it probably isn't as much of an addiction as you think it is.
And one last thing, and I'll shut up. But, so, like, currently I'm in a state of, like, I play Apex Legends, which is a battle royale game, and I'm at the current level where I can actually become pro, so I can make, like, millions of dollars a year. And so I'm in the state of, do I fulfill God's calling in my life and go into youth ministry, or do I go after my fleshly desires and make that money, you see? And
why is making money a fleshly desire? There's nothing wrong with wanting to make money.
That's a great access to ministry.
Yeah.
Very needed.
Yeah.
It's like, I've come across 10 people the last year, my wife and I, couples and young men who were discipling. All of them are gamers.
Mm-hmm.
I game with all of them. I learn new games.
Yeah, if you're wondering something about it, I'd also recommend maybe Gary Friesen's book, Decision Making and the Will of God, because there's a whole lot of misunderstanding on the will of God. Yes.
I just wanted to come really over here. Like, I think that you could be very influential to young people if you were a professional Apex Legends player.
Yeah.
That's very attractive to people who are of that age.
C.S. Lewis once said, what if someone wanted to learn astronomy, the best person that you go to learn about that was a Christian?
And then I do have a question as well. So,
okay.
I'm just wondering basically how we could figure out which games to play, because there is a lot of like witchcraft and sorcery and sexual and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just wondering, like, what's the line?
This is a Romans 14, 1 Corinthians 8 through 10 matter. Like, some people could be alcoholics, they should never play a game that might involve alcohol in some way. I don't drink at all. I could play a game that involves alcohol. Okay, not a problem for me. You're going to have to decide now. I mean, I'd say something like if a game has explicit pornographic images in there, which exist, no. Stay away. But you have to decide on your own. You have to decide what it's doing to you. And I said, watch how you play the game with other people as well, how you treat them, especially in a multi-man online role-playing game.
And then another thing, too, like, with the opportunity of evangelism that comes with online games, should that be pursued more than solo gaming, where you're playing by yourself and kind of, you know, achieving challenges and stuff like that?
I'm thinking about image of a literal Hispanic growing up. Why not both? There's a time and place for both things. So, I mean, I'd say also don't play games just to do evangelism. Play games because you enjoy them, and then evangelism will come as you work for it. Tim?
Yeah, Nick, this is a little bit of a sideways question because I don't have a gaming addiction, but I've had college students in my classes who have come to me and said, I think I have a gaming addiction.
Mm-hmm.
These are not Christian students, right? I teach on a secular university campus. And when a very academically gifted student says, I'm having trouble even getting to my schoolwork because I go home and I just drop into the gaming thing, then this is the person themselves realizing there's a problem.
Yep.
Because I don't have the kind of link that you have into the gaming community, I am sort of not quite sure where to go to offer help to someone who self-diagnoses that. I'm not talking about sticking a finger under somebody else's nose and accusing them. I'm talking about people who come to me.
Right.
And there's like a hand up in the air. Is that about this?
No.
Or, okay, then we'll
I'll get to you when he's done, so you don't have to keep your hand up.
Okay. So are there resources you would recommend, places to go, something that you would recommend I find out as additional information? Well, where would you go with that?
Alexander Priss's book is the best one I've read that covers the gaming mind.
All right.
But I would want to talk to him and say, okay, tell me about the games you play.
Got it.
Why do you play them? What do you get out of them?
Right.
Because it's kind of like if someone truly has a problem and you remove what they're addicted to, they still have a problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You need to find out what the problem is.
So, funny enough, I am actually going to school to become a game designer.
Mm-hmm. Please make games that don't suck.
that's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'll try to do. So, one thing is, I think people also go to video games to like get out of real life, because
mm-hmm.
in real life there's so many problems like politics and other stuff. So, doing a little bit of research, for video games, so I'm planning on making telling a story about the Bible, of like each book, going to each book, like different games.
Trying to
touch it, because like VeggieTales, I grew up with like VeggieTales, and
yeah.
I love the stories with it, because I still remember.
Even non-Christians love VeggieTales.
Yeah. And one thing that I was thinking, that would not be in the game, is like playing God. But I recently found out from IGN that there's this one Christian game, I don't know if it's coming out or already came out, that they have on their ad for it. It's them playing as God, turning water into wine. What is your opinion on that?
No one can truly make a game playing as God, because he's so vastly different from us, but there are games that you can kind of take a God position. As it were, Populous, SimCity. What about, for instance, anybody ever heard of Civilization before? Sid Meier, who's behind that game, is a devout Lutheran.
Minecraft.
Yeah, Minecraft, creating games, because people love to create things. There was someone who I understood on Minecraft created the entire city of Mecca on Minecraft. And people do these kinds of things. So I'd say, again, there's no hard and fast rule, but I would say it'd be literally impossible to make some where you literally are God.
Okay, even if it's like betraying God?
Yeah. Okay, was there another question?
I just had a comment about the video game addiction. You know, video game addiction is a process addiction. There's resources out there, just how alcohol addiction, like we all know, like alcohol addiction, what do I do? Those same resources, those same qualifications that give someone help with alcohol addiction, it's the same exact thing. Go to a counselor, go to a therapist, talk to the people, you know, in that community. Like I'm in recovery. I'm in recovery. Like we talk about process addictions all the time. Often people switch from a substance addiction to a process addiction. Mm-hmm. It's an easy transition to make, but it's the same exact help that's needed. And those process addictions will oftentimes take over so much worse because it's not as frowned upon.
Social stigmatized, right?
Yeah, so it's like, well, you're playing video games, like I'm not hurting anybody else, but it's letting you consume your life. And addiction is anything that, you know, if you were to take it away, it would cause distress in a person's life,
right.
You know, and video games are that. If you take a kid's video game and you throw it out the window, that kid's going to have a meltdown. I mean, we've seen it all over. It's called process addiction, and there is just as many resources. Just if any drug or alcohol place, if they focus on, you know, full mind health, would be able to help out with those process addictions just the same.
Because the addiction is not to the item, it's the mental process.
Right. It's,
yeah.
It's
something like the relief.
Yeah.
If you address that, then you can.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
it. It's the same exact tool.
I think a man will often go out seeking somewhere where he can get rewards. Or something. He doesn't get them in his real life. And to an extent, there's nothing wrong. I mean, I only know one of the reasons I can play games sometimes now is because going through divorce takes my mind away from things for a little bit. And I think that's just fine. We all need hobbies like that.
But I think, I'm sorry, anybody?
Go ahead.
I think we have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that we consumes our time, but it's not just consuming our time, it's make-believe.
Yeah.
And that's very dangerous, too. It's ruined a lot of marriages. I've seen a lot of marriages ruined because the guy played video games and his attitude towards his wife changed. He became more of the character in the game than he was really when they got married. So we do have to watch out for that, to not be all consumed by that game. And if we do see that, you know, like you're at work or you're at school and you just can't wait to get home to get on that game, there probably is a problem there. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're married and your desire is to get home, get on the game instead of go and meet my wife and talk to my wife, there's an issue there. So, there is a very obvious problem with it. But with all things, if we will seek God first, and within the game, keep God first.
Mm-hmm.
But he is a great connection.
Yeah.
I'm a family pastor. I serve children and youth, and it does give me a connection with the youth.
Yeah.
But I don't do all their games. But I do some of the games.
Okay, question back there.
Yeah, and first of all, Nick, thank you. Like, I think you did a great job of pointing out resources and ways that we can relate.
Mm-hmm.
I also have struggled in my journey with game addiction massively.
That's my wallpaper right there.
I was very competitive to a level of being number one in certain games in the world kind of thing. And it took my daughter looking at me one day and saying, "Daddy, you play that game so much. When are you going to spend time with me?"
Mm-hmm.
And that's a reality that we do have to face, and we can encourage, and I always encourage gaming amongst families and parents with kids, and even like cousins. I have a nephew that I started playing a game because he was interested. Now I play it more than he does, but it's a community game for me. It's something that I'm involved with heavily, and I do it for community. I miss it now because I don't have a community of it. And so those are things. So it is good. But I had to completely remove it from my life, just like my brother said over there, in order to know whether or not it was of value. And it got to the point where, again, I saw once I pulled away, and my fear is also in these games specifically. Console games are a little different. Yeah. I think console games are to be encouraged because the gaming community and whatnot. But the hardship that I had was when I could access it right here all the time. Mm-hmm. And these games are made specifically so that you won't ever stop. And so there is addictive, major addictive personality. I say that to say it has been also a great ministry, but be willing to remove it completely. But anyway, in that, Nick, one question I did have for you was, I know you profess the game a lot, you love gaming, and again, you're passionate about it, and I love that. Are you now at a different stage here where you have more social atmosphere? Are you finding that you are able to cut off the games in order to be more social, to be more interactive here? Is it easy for you, or how do you go about doing it?
Okay, this for me is still a challenge. Something Tim and I have talked about. We have a type of people that go to parties, and we're saying things. Gosh, I hope no one says anything to me. I hope no one says anything to me. Then we leave, and we say, why didn't anyone say anything to me? I mean, I have to push myself to go to parties because I don't know how to interact well with people. That's not because of gaming. That's because I'm on the spectrum.
Sure.
And also, Nick, you are one of the new words somebody gave me lately, the intro virtuous.
Yeah.
We're here to help, but we kind of wish we weren't.
Sure. Yeah. For me, the internet has been such a godsend. It gave me a voice. I mean, I'm a recipient of a CAST ski scholarship, and they said, well, you have to go out and do evangelism at least once a week. Mm-hmm. Can I do that on the internet somehow? The thought of me going out and speaking to one person individually terrifies me.
Sure.
I would rather do this kind of talk than do that at all. But I also, I mean, I've got a therapist that I was seeing back when I lived in Georgia. He's helping me with my divorce, but I'm seeing someone here in person who's helping me with social skills. Because I've told him one of my goals, I want to get remarried, I don't know how to interact, can you help me? And he's going to be watching me, he's taught me something about how to work in this dreaded abysmal evil called small talk, for instance. I'm working on that the best I can. Usually when I get home, though, I'm pretty much sticking to myself, just me and my little kitty here. I can see if I can show a picture of him for everyone who wants to see, because it's a sin, I think, to talk about my cat and not show a picture of him. This is the king of a household right there, Shiro.
And following up real quick on that, Nick, too. So one thing, and I love what you said as far as like interactions and whatnot, and also I have actually studied, I'm doing in-depth counseling. I was actually on licensure plan for a minute, and counseling is absolutely the number one. And anyone who's in ministry, you have resources. Worst case scenario, just call up the Leek McGee Counseling Center, no matter where you're at. Call up, because we're part of the Southern Baptist Convention, part of the Parker program. And so call up and say, hey, I need a resource. We have a group, a Facebook group, that says, hey, we need a resource in this area. Who's available? Who knows what?
Yeah.
So that is the best resource you can have. Counseling is ideal and needed, of course, all areas of our lives, but specifically with video games, it is to be considered, just like I love what you said about the substance going to the prosthetics. Yeah, because absolutely, my brother's an alcoholic, and I saw the similarities in that fear of what it did to me and everything within his disease and illness and my illness as well.
I can also say that next September I have my birthday here. And I was wondering, because I like my birthday, but I also don't publicize it. I was wondering how many people would actually know this. So I opened my door at my apartment building, and I'm a day. At first, I think there's golden water pouring from my ceiling when I opened the door. And then I look, it's streamers pouring outside my door. Happy birthday. There's some gifts right outside there. I tell you, it wasn't the monetary value, of it, but I got gifts from friends and family. I said, that was the best gift I got that day, because there was someone who I hadn't even told them my birthday was coming. They looked it up and they did something special for my day. I do have some friends here, and I am super thankful. One thing I do get from games, friends are everything. They are my fellow party members on my quest.
Can I just make an appeal? I'm maybe the token grandmother in the room, I don't know, but I've watched one of my kids disappear into video games, and that's why I came. And I will say this, if you are a gamer and you are on the platforms, watch out for loneliness.
Yes. Yeah.
My kid disappeared. Yes. Some groups got to him, and I don't know when we'll get him back, but he's totally and utterly changed. So if you're looking for the evangelistic opportunity, watch for loneliness, because a lot of kids are.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I got one last question. I'll make it real quick. What do you think God's take is on us playing video? Obviously, you're not God, but what do you think God's take is on us playing video games? Is it more of a hobby for us, or is it a void that we're trying to fill up?
Yeah.
I think if you literally in every hobby there's something you're trying to get, which is fine. You might want to get a book like Mike Whitworth's book, Becoming Worldly Christians.
What was that book called?
Becoming Worldly Christians. I think it is Mike Whitworth. But he says you must enjoy the things of this earth in order to enjoy God. And I don't remember who wrote it, but there's also a book, Strangely Bright. Yeah, it's kind of like how, you know, that some of the things of earth will grow strangely dim, and I'm growing grace brings us. Well, what about things grow strangely bright? I mean, I even like how Peter Craven once said, sometimes I worry I'm a bigger Red Sox fan than I am a Jesus fan. I like that.
Who is Worldly Christians by?
I think Mike Whitmer.
Mike Whitmer?
Yeah.
And then who was Strangely Bright by?
I honestly can't remember
okay.
right
no
now,
worries.
But the book is Strangely Bright.
I appreciate you hosting this class.
Thank you,
sir.
What
down?
Green
man.
What's
the
trick? I think this was probably the most intriguing class. What? It's in my top three for sure. This is really good.
It's different than what I thought it would be. It's really great. Thank you.
Oh, you just got it all. It's just the door stuff. I thought it was some fancy thing. Like,
I was going to do it in the suite.
Wow. Okay, cool.
Thank you.
Next, I don't know what the top attendance was, but at one point there were at least 26 people in attendance plus you, so 27 in the room.
My parents are going to be thrilled.
Fire Marshal may not have been too happy about it, but this...
They don't have to know.
You packed it out, man.
Yeah,
how did
I do?
I thought it was great. I was fascinated. I actually took a shot of some of the resource slides and was typing in some of the others. There is now we have a course on values in video games at Western Michigan. There's a whole, gaming and development kind of... thing that's taking off. I need to know more about this. This is just something I don't know very much.
I saw it. I saw you kind of react when I talked about Final Fantasy X and how you fight sin.
You're like, whoa, okay, that's...
Yeah, I read about what?
Now, people's concepts of
the
supernatural are sometimes formed by these stories, and they're not always very well articulated, and so we need to be aware that we need to give them something better, but...
Yeah.
Nick, thanks so much for your talk.
Thank
it was fantastic.
Can you make your slides available?
My email, apologianick@gmail.com.
apologianick@gmail.
Yeah, if you send me an email, I'll send it to you.
Apologianick, N-I-C-K. Just hit like apologia, N-I-C-K, his name.
Yeah.
At gmail.com.
Gotcha. Anyway, I wanted to jump in the discussion about...
That's step outside, because I'm next.
All right, sure. About how the virtual life that my kids live. I have a 10-year-old boy.
Cupcakes!
Yeah.
Sorry.